This is episode 394 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, July 23rd, 2012.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
This is an exciting day in the history of the NBN.
Copyright.gov is down. FBI.gov is next to go.
The world is in trouble. There is no Wikipedia.
Who here has an iPhone? Who here has a BlackBerry? Who here uses Gmail? Well, you're all screwed.
So we'll be monitoring this very closely. No one will pay for these rights if they can't find a way to make money off them.
Copyright is such a big issue. Legislation as 2006 is already outdated by the new technologies.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McCollum. On the show today, Microsoft announces the release date of its new operating system, Windows 8, at the same time announcing its first ever loss. Marissa Mayer takes up a new role as CEO of Yahoo, and it's official, we're just about to run out of mobile phone numbers in Australia. So ACMA has announced a new range of mobile numbers to begin rolling out in the not-too-distant future. Qantas rolls out iPads for in-flight entertainment, and there's a new no-frills ISP to resell the NBN. But it's only for those who are tech savvy. And Adam takes a look at the future of device connectivity and accessory obsolescence with the pending release of Apple's new phone rumoured for the fourth quarter of this year. There's the latest in gaming, and don't forget the usual Oddspot gadget app and website of the week. That's all to come on today's edition of Tech Talk Radio. First up though, here's this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio news desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Google's employee number 20, Marissa Mayer, defects to Yahoo. Microsoft reports its first loss in 26 years. The end of an email botnet responsible for almost 20% of the world's spam. The ACCC approves the Optus HFC shutdown. And experts warn against over-reliance on mobile applications. Welcome to Tech Talk News. The 20th person to join Google in its formative years, Ms. Marissa Mayer, has jumped ship. The 37-year-old software engineer has been lured by Yahoo to the position of chief executive with a $59 million package, which includes salary, bonuses, stock and stock options. The position at Yahoo has been vacant since previous CEO Mr. Scott Thompson stepped aside in May following a scandal over misleading qualifications he allegedly provided to the board to secure the position. Ms. Mayer's loss will be felt dearly at Google. In her 13 years with the search giant, she oversaw the development of many popular products and services, including Google Search, Google Toolbar, iGoogle, and Gmail. Ms. Mayer is the fifth chief executive of Yahoo in as many years and is now under intense pressure to turn Yahoo around from its declining share in advertising revenues, Yahoo competing not only with Google but now Facebook and Twitter. Software juggernaut Microsoft has reported its first quarterly loss in 26 years. While Microsoft's online ad business comprises just 4% of its annual revenue, its 2007 purchase of online ad service Aquantive proved unsuccessful in competing with Google, resulting in a $6.2 billion write-down. However, analysts were optimistic, saying the results had beaten market expectations. The company still posted an annual profit of nearly $17 billion, and shares rose nearly 2.5% to just over $31 in after-hours electronic trading following the earnings announcement. Chief Executive Officer Mr. Steve Ballmer said the company had delivered record fourth quarter and annual revenue and was fast approaching the most exciting launch season in Microsoft history, referring to the imminent release of the Windows 8 operating system. A botnet responsible for almost 20% of the world's spam email has been shut down, according to security experts. The so-called Grum botnet used around 120,000 infected zombie computers to send millions of spam emails every day. Last week, it was announced a joint effort by security experts in the United States, Britain, and Russia had been successful, with all command and control servers being taken offline. A spokesperson from international security researcher FireEye said this collaboration Commission is sending a strong message to all the spammers. Stop sending us spam. We don't need your cheap Viagra or fake Rolex. The joint effort involved FireEye Malware Intelligence Lab, the British-based Spamhaus Project, and the Russian-based Computer Security Incident Response Team, known as CertGIB. Disabling the Grum botnet is just one of many high-profile efforts to eradicate spam. The BBC said a Russian man was sentenced in May to 4 years jail for his involvement in a botnet, believed to have been generating more than £80,000 a month in revenue. Australia's competition watchdog, the ACCC, has approved an agreement between NBN Co and Optus to migrate customers from the hybrid fibre coaxial services to the NBN. The agreement also allows for the decommissioning of parts of Optus's cable network. Optus will be paid some $800 million to move its HFC customers once the NBN becomes available in particular areas. Optus said the decision would allow it to redirect resources from supporting the HFC network to more effectively open retail competition on a single advanced network that covers the country. The decision was slammed by Shadow Minister for Communications and Broadband, Mr. Malcolm Turnbull, who described the ACCC's decision as being a very black day. Mr. Turnbull said the reasoning given by the ACCC was unbelievably confused and contradictory, but the ACCC's chairman, Mr. Rod Sims, said approval for the deal was finely balanced and that the benefits of the deal outweighed any public disadvantage. And a market research company has warned against over-reliance on mobile applications. A spokesperson for Forrester Research said companies did not always realise a return on investment from developing and launching mobile apps, particularly in the retail sales market. Retailers are also being warned to prepare for the local launch of Amazon, which would inevitably have a local online presence and distribution channels operating within Australia. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Let's face it, the bill Shock's been a bit of a killer.
Get this, it's $99.
That, to use the words of Hitchhikers, is really big.
Is that really that guy's name, Dr. Pepper?
Look, I did a lot of research.
The content provided keep blocking services and closing loopholes.
Andrew, Android.
You can sometimes diagnose hardware fault just by looking with your eyes.
Anything's possible.
Are there apps?
There are apps.
There's more to communication than talking.
I don't hate you. Are you still there?
I predict that you only turn that on once a week.
Science.
It is science. It's exciting.
It is. It's extremely exciting.
What's happening to the share price?
That's on the up.
That is so stupid.
Yes. Welcome to Australian television.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
So time again, we're back in your ears, in your iPod, in your speakers. Dr. Ron, how are you going?
In your car stereo.
In your plane, in your train.
In the plane, mowing the lawn, on the train.
Yeah,
I'm good. How are you going?
Yeah, good.
A little bit sniffly, a little bit croaky.
Yeah, I know. We've given it to you this time. We're all, the three of us are on the up, but you've gone down. Yeah, sorry about that.
Spread the love.
See, it was Lena. She licked you, didn't she?
Yeah.
I warned you.
Yeah.
Didn't listen. That's always why listen to Lena.
Now I know why you make people sign that waiver.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, lots to talk about this week. Lena, how are you going?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, good. You've taken your green scarf off.
You're
warming up a bit now.
My Minecraft scarf.
Yeah, it's a creeper scarf.
My scarf.
It's crept off,
has it? It's damn awesome.
Yep, it's green and it has a little creeper face on it.
It's very green. And Lena's is wearing no other colour tonight apart from the green scarf, and it just glows.
Yay.
Graham's joined us. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Andrew.
How's Tricks?
Yeah, going okay.
Yeah, oh, good. Any technological hicks during the week, or did it all go swimmingly?
Actually, had an interesting one from a customer during the course of the week, which perhaps we'll talk about a bit later on in the show, perhaps.
Yeah. Give us a tease. What was it about?
Web filtering.
Oh.
Ooh.
Joining up with the Conroys.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Something like that. Yeah. On a business network.
Oh.
So
blocking things that people are accessing and they shouldn't be.
That's the idea.
Oh, well, station. That could apply to home too for the kids.
Yeah, it could do too. Yes.
So stick around for that one. That'd be good. Well, I had a near catastrophe during the course of the week.
A near catastrophe?
Ruh-roh.
What happened to you?
What happened to me? Well, remember how a couple of weeks back Adam Turner was talking about doing backups and stuff like that?
Yeah.
And how easy it is to actually lose most of your children's photos from a bygone era.
Oh, no.
The hard drive which I stored all the family digital photos on decided to make those noises that we all love. Tick, tick. Yeah, that's it. Tick.
Oh, that's the worst.
It's like the sound of a marble dropping on a bench.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh. And it never comes back. You can keep plugging it in every so often just on the odd chance. You go, will it spin up? Will I be able to read it? But it hasn't done it yet.
But you did say near catastrophe, so I've got my fingers and toes crossed for
you.
It
was a near catastrophe because I've really got Adam Turner to thank for this because he was the one who instigated my search or my quest for a good backup server. And you know how I went and backed up? Well, I found this site in the United States. Well, anyway, the $256 Australian, which I paid for a 4-year subscription to back up everything I have.
Worth every cent?
Is worth every goddamn cent, tell you? So,
what was the site you used?
CrashPlan.
CrashPlan.com. Okay.
I've got a family thing, which means you can upload. You've got 10 computers, you can upload them. Not a commercial, but I'm just saying this is what happened to me. And literally, it happened within a month of signing up. So all the family photos were stuck up there in the cloud. I was just about to do my own internal backups across the network and all that sort of stuff because I just built a new NAS. And luckily for me, thankfully, it was all stored in the cloud. So cloud one, phew, me zero.
So how much data is involved in this problem?
This data was about 46 gig.
46 gigabytes?
Yeah.
And you're going to have to download that over your internet connection.
Yeah, well, I uploaded it. So I'm downloading it at the same time.
It'll take a while before you've got anything back, won't it?
Well, I'm using two internet. I'm using work as well as home to download it.
Right.
And I'm getting full whack as fast as I can, 1.8 megabits per second down on my ADSL2 connection. So it's doing all right. I think I've got
You should come over to my place and download it.
I should, shouldn't I?
Yeah. I got 78 megabits per second last week.
Download it in a few seconds.
I could. Mm. There you go. Anyway, news on your internet, they're phasing it out, did you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. So if you haven't done it and you've got you do want to show the kids something at their 18th birthday of all their family photos, be sure to do a backup. Very, very important. Anyway, that's life.
There's a lot of services like that out there, like CrashPlan is one. As Andrew said, we're not a commercial. It's just something that we use that works.
Yeah,
I use a service called Carbonite. I know Graham's got services that do similar things as well, but have a shop around.
Yeah, but don't be confused about ones that are like a cloning service. They're not backup services.
There's
like
a difference
Dropbox
between collaboration services and backup services. Yeah. Like CrashPlan and Carbonite, they're all backup services. And Dropbox is a collaboration service. It's a different model.
Yeah. So check those out. But anyway, save my bacon. Very happy. Very, very happy.
That's
for the
good
price of what a removable hard drive would have been. I've got 4 years of remote cloud storage. And the good thing is you can pull it down anywhere. You don't have to be on the same machine or anything.
And hard disks will fail. It's one of those certainties
they do
in
fail.
Life like,
they do fail.
Like death and taxes. Mm. Hard disks have a finite life and yep, you can't say it more clearly than that. They will fail, and you just need to have those sorts of systems
in
place.
Backup
sound systems.
Terrible sound.
It sends shivers down the spine.
It does. If you've never heard it before, it's tick, tick, tick. Yeah.
It's a sad sound.
It is. Now, the other thing, too, completely different topic here. Have you ever used Androids? You probably haven't, Leans, but
no.
Anyone else use Androids location, like the mapping service on your mobile or on a device like that? Whilst mobile. The reason that I
the actual location services function that's built in.
Like just maps.
Yeah, like Google Maps.
Yeah, and put me on the map. And it often asks you, well, it asks me, turn your Wi-Fi on for better accuracy. How can it be more accurate than a GPS and having Wi-Fi turned on?
Yeah, this worries me
this
a little bit.
It happened a couple of times. And I've got to talk about this on the radio.
Did they mean just faster instead of more accurate?
No. They say for better accuracy, turn on your Wi-Fi.
That's weird.
It is.
And it does give better accuracy too, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah, this worries
You've
me.
You've seen this too, have you, Dr. Ron?
It worries me since I've had my Wi-Fi only iPad and I have location services turned on that and it shows me on the map where I am down to the house in the street. Mm-hmm. And I think,
how do you know that?
There is
that
no GPS
Wi-Fi,
functionality built into this device. How do you know that just from the SSID that I'm connected to? It's a bit concerning. And if you Google the SSID, which is the name of your wireless network...
Oh, I've never tried that.
Well, see, mine doesn't come up. It's not publicly available. Obviously, someone's driven past and made a note of the SSID, the network name, and put it in a database somewhere.
The Google car. The Google mobile.
Ooh, creepy.
It's very scary because the IP address I'm using is dynamic.
Well, change
with my internet service provider, so it's changing every few
change
days.
Change your SSID on your wireless thing and see what happens. You might become nomadic.
You might
vanish, yeah.
Graham, have you got any clues how they do that magic?
Well, exactly like you say.
Smoke and mirrors stuff?
The reason it's more accurate is because it's using more than one method. so that it's narrowing things down. So it's probably using the GPS as well as the Wi-Fi. So two sources of information is going to get you more accurate than one source of information.
But on a device like the iPad, which doesn't
have
GPS.
Got that. Yeah, that's so that's only using the one source. But Wi-Fi networks are generally very low power, so the SSID is very local. You have an option turned on in your router that says to broadcast the SSID.
I certainly do. Yes, I do.
And broadcast means broadcast. Anyone can receive it.
Mm.
So it's not like they're doing something wrong. They're using the network. You know, they're receiving your broadcast because you are sending it out to be received.
Look, I don't think there's anything wrong with it, but it's got my mind thinking, like, wow, they've done a lot of work here in the background. SSIDs have been mapped, says Elroy in our chat room. They use all the SSIDs that your device can see to triangulate where you are. If you're listening to us live, come and join us in the chat room, which is at chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
It is possible they're also using the MAC address of your wireless access point as well, so it might not matter if you change your SSID. They might know it by its MAC address as well.
I was reading on the Google blog the other day, you can actually put your SSID underscore no map in your SSID and it will not, well, they say, they being Google, say it will not be mapped.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't believe
Google asked me for something the other day, like my date of birth or something.
Oh, cute.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. Come on, Google, come on.
Really?
Pretended they didn't know. That's adorable.
It is.
They say romance is dead.
Oh, crazy kidders.
Yeah.
That'd be a warm, fuzzy
hilarious
feeling.
Hilarious.
Oh, dear. Well, let's see what the masses have to say, shall we?
Your say on Tech Talk Radio.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is how to communicate with the panel. Brian via the contact form.
Hi,
who?
Brian.
Who? Brian?
Brian.
Brain.
No.
Don't
no.
say that. Anyone named Brian hates it. I work with one. If you want to get him offside, that's what you do.
Done.
Especially if you type it and you accidentally transpose the A and the I.
Mm. I do all the time.
Brian, all is forgiven. We're sorry. We're sorry. Not, yeah. You people.
Oh,
hang on.
I'm not sorry anymore. You called us you people.
Appear to have missed the Cisco new router EA4500 issue.
Yeah, I didn't need one that week.
Where the user is required to join Cloud Connect and cannot change their own router by the usual admin and password process. Cisco updates the firmware on the cloud and the user is monitored and the details are passed on to a third party re your media usage, etc. There has been a major outrage. Sorry for the sketchy details, but it is big news. Brian. Well, Brian, for the information of your people, we did some research.
Yeah, brain.
How people have spoken to your people. I like Dr. Wrong with a cold. He goes off.
Connect Cloud was launched with a new product, which was the EA4500. As well as retrospectively rolling this out for many existing products. Cisco pushed the service out automatically as an update for the firmware that controls a lot of its routers. In order to manage your router, you have to sign up to Cisco Connect Cloud site with these products. If you don't, it's impossible to manage the router now. That's drastic enough, says this a news article from boingboing.net, and this should never happen without Cisco customers consenting to the change. But it gets worse. If you sign up to Cloud Connect service, the initial terms and conditions ban customers from using it for obscene, pornographic or offensive purposes, and also for infringing on another's right, including but not limited to intellectual property rights. Long story short, the whole thing blew up spectacularly as enraged Cisco customers vented their fury online. Cisco scrambled to repair the damage. They apologised, saying that the offending clauses were inserted by mistake. Is this enough to restore the trust?
I'm sure they just do it to see if they can get away with it.
Cisco has lost with
I
customers.
I hope no one doesn't notice.
Hmm.
Not on.
We were talking about this earlier tonight, Graeme, weren't we? It's one thing to do it to a new product, but they've sort of retrospectively done it for a whole product suite.
Yeah, it's curious that. I have to admit, I haven't read up about this issue. I'm wishing I had. There would be a lot of Cisco customers who have their networks locked down to varying degrees that their routers may not necessarily have access to the outside world. So, this does seem like an odd move.
That's in particular, yeah, but routers that can't see the internet.
Yeah.
If the administrator come along and done an update manually.
Exactly,
suddenly you can't control it anymore unless it is connected to the internet. Cisco, what are you doing? Oh, well, that's boingboing.net is where that article was, and there has been a number of posts, angry posts about it. Thanks for bringing that to our attention, Brian. Tech Talk Radio correspondent and weekly couch contributor Adam Turner via direct email.
Ooh.
I don't mean your average latte-sipping, MacBook-wielding, metrosexual digital hipster.
Yeah, that guy. I'd love to hear
so much crankiness.
A quick rant.
Oh, really?
From GC.
Oh, here we go.
On Ooh. Microsoft's design, I beg your pardon, on Microsoft's decision to scrap Small Business Server, aka SBS, it will impact on a lot of small businesses and is part of Microsoft's effort to push people onto Office 365.
What is Office 365, for those who don't know?
We're all looking at Graham intently because
the Office...
Is that Office 13 with an extra digit?
It's Office as it's Office as a service. It's software as a service, basically.
In part in the cloud,
yes. So it's an online version of Word and Excel and those programs that you use all the time that are part of the Office suite. And I think when you use it, you do also get a license to use the installed versions as well. But the primary focus is online, which is kind of nice. And because it's software as a service, you pay it as a subscription rather than as a upfront cost, which spreads the cost out over time, which is good for Microsoft in that it... means that they've got a continuing revenue stream, but it can be good for some customers who would prefer to have a small recurring cost than a large upfront cost. Some customers have reservations about storing all their data online. I've encountered this a few times, people having privacy concerns or reliability concerns or, you know, those sorts of... You know, if my business's data is all in the cloud, then, you know, and my customers' personal details and all that sort of stuff, then where do we stand from a privacy and protection and also from a backup point of view of having continuity if something goes wrong with the cloud hosting service?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that's what Office 365 is all about.
Yeah, I was just reading about it here. Office 365 Home Premium features 20 gigabytes of SkyDrive storage
mm-hmm.
and 60 minutes of Skype minutes for working for worldwide calling. So they're building their Skype client into their Office suite.
Because they bought Skype not so long ago, didn't they?
And Microsoft will sell the next version of its Office productivity suite under a subscription model to users as part of its continued moves to the cloud-based version of the software. So there you go.
So that's Office 365. But
so back to the servers?
The original point of the email was about SBS.
Microsoft's decision to scrap Small Business Server.
Yeah, now, Small Business Server is basically something that sits in the office. I use it, and it's a terrific service. It's a Microsoft suite with a mail exchange in it, isn't it, Graham?
Yes, it is. It's...
That was pointed throat clearing there.
Yes.
It was.
Microsoft Small Business Server... is an abomination of a system that had its place at one time in the world, but really that time is long
2000?
Since gone. Yeah.
SBS 2000?
Like most Microsoft products. Lol.
Here we go.
Look forward to your angry letters.
I don't mind.
Don't you hate people that are always putting down Microsoft?
I use Xbox.
Don't be a hater.
I use Xbox.
What was I saying?
You've thrown him.
But it's bad. SBS is bad.
The concept of SBS is it's a single server that can be deployed as it's an entry level for small businesses of they promoted as 5 to 75 users. Seventy-five is extremely gutsy.
Five's good,
but these days even 5 is gutsy because it tries to run an Active Directory server and an Exchange server and SQL servers all on the one server.
That's never going to work.
Now, any Microsoft server administrator is going to say exactly what you just said. That's never going to work. And in practice these days, it just doesn't. So, you end up with, you know, an abomination that's hard to use and hard to manage.
So to paraphrase, you're saying that it's probably a good thing that Microsoft's going this way, but what are the alternatives?
The alternatives is to use a cloud-hosted replacement for your Exchange server, so you don't run your own Exchange server in your business. You have your collaboration server in the cloud, hooked up with your Office 365 installation and so on, so that all of that stuff's done for you elsewhere, so you don't have to run that on your own server. Or if you're a bigger organization, so if you're at the 75 end, then Microsoft now have licensing of their server products. So you would buy Server Enterprise. Oh no, Server Enterprise isn't existing. You'd buy Server Data Center or a couple of versions of Server Standard, and virtualize servers, so that you still might be running one hardware server, but you would virtualize separate servers for your Active Directory server, your File and Print server, your Exchange server, and that works a whole lot better than SBS did.
So from your point of view, it's a good thing that Microsoft's made this decision?
Well, it was an inevitable thing. I can see why people are going to miss the product. It did have advantages in terms of ease of administration and was really nice for people running their own small business, like Andrew had found, in that he was able to run that and set that up without making IT his business. He was able to run that server himself as, you know, while still running a business that wasn't an IT business. But I think for a number of reasons, its time has passed.
What services do you use it on, Andrew? You use mail, web?
No, I don't use web.
No?
Mail and DNSing are really the services that I use on it. And everything else, like file and print serving and all that sort of stuff, can be done on anything these days.
Does it function like as a domain controller?
Yeah. It works well.
You have to
works well.
Set up a path, a migration path to the new,
yeah,
the new way.
Oh, absolutely. Until the internet goes down, then you're between a rock and a very hard place.
Well, as Graham identified, that's right. There are issues with having everything stored in the cloud, and it's not necessarily just going to be Microsoft's problem. If your ISP, you know, you lose connectivity with your ISP for a short time, it's going to disrupt your business. Adam, I hope that is a good...
It's a nepotistic email?
Yeah. Well, no, not really. It's
good rant.
It's good, yeah. It's good to explore these things and talk about these things. There's a lot of people would use Small Business Server and wouldn't know what the future held for it. Freak, via the contact form, says, "Hi, guys."
Hi, Freak.
"In regards to the discussion on the new rules ACMA have set in place for the telcos, I wrote in a couple of weeks ago arguing with Telstra about the way their website is set up, not being able to track calls properly." Yeah, we remember that feedback. "It's about time that they finally started to do something to get the telcos to alert us on approaching the caps. Now, I understand the telcos don't have to put this in place until next year, but my wife got a notification the other night from Telstra saying she'd hit 85% of her cap. It was all good to see that Telstra was able to do this so fast, considering when I complained many times over, they repeatedly told me this was not possible, which I knew was a load of carp, as they do it perfectly well." So that's how you
fish.
Do it, Lena.
Nice.
Nice.
"For my Big Pond account, why should it take the ACMA to step in to overhaul the way telcos work when there are customers like myself who have been arguing these very points for years? Freak, I think it comes down to one thing, and that's the bottom line. It's not in their interests to encourage people, you know, off caps and to make things clear because they're making a lot of money out of it. It also costs them to put these systems in place as well. I change telcos frequently because of how useless I find them all. I'm hoping one day I'll be able to find one provider that I'm happy with and stick with them, knowing I'm getting a good deal and not getting shafted from one day to the next."
It's a bit like an electricity company, post-carbon tax.
Got to shop around?
Yes. That's another story for another radio show.
And there are broker websites available that'll help you do this, aren't there?
Yes, there are.
You can put in your...
But be warned of those broker websites. They get kickbacks and commissions from those that they work with.
Yes, they do. And someone got taken to task about that not so long ago by the ACCC.
Someone did.
They were only offering like one or two or three
providers
out of a possible dozen or so because they were getting kickbacks, yeah. Thanks for the feedback, Freak. Dark Splat via the contact form says, "Hi, team. I'd like to say well done on the show. I've been listening for a few years now." Thanks, Dark Splat. "My question is more towards Lena.
Hey,
he said he'd like to say it, but he didn't actually say it. Is that?
Yes, he'd like to say.
That might
well
be
done.
A bit of a backhander.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Dark, let us know what we can do.
I'd like to help you. Yes, but
Hi, I'd like to help you. My question's more towards Lena and her disappointment of D3.
Yeah.
Oh, D3.
Diablo 3.
Why not give SWTOR a try?
SWTOR.
SWTOR. Star Wars: The Old Republic.
Yep, that's the one.
Okay. Give that a try. It's a lot better than any other MMO.
That's where you've lost me. I don't do MMOs.
You don't do MMO. MMO stands for...
Massively Multiplayer Online.
With only EVE IMO a distant second. EVE IMO?
I think it just means EVE Online.
Is that another game? EVE is another game?
EVE's another game, yeah.
This article...
IMO is probably, in my opinion...
Oh, yep.
With
yep.
only That's EVE, it. In my opinion, a distant second. Oh, yeah. I keep up, my brain's going to explode.
Too many TLAs.
It is. Too many TLAs. This article highlights some main points as to what makes it different from other MMOs and more enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
And Dark Splat has posted a link there to a Sydney Morning Herald article about the new Old Republic. He says it's free to play up to level 15 forever. So you can come in, you can play the Origin Worlds, see the great storytelling, get hooked. Do it at your own pace. Daniel Erickson, lead designer on The Old Republic, told the Sydney Morning Herald, "The great thing about The Old Republic is that we didn't build it in a classic MMO mold. We built it in a classic BioWare RPG mold."
Mm-hmm.
Role-playing game?
Yes,
RPG?
Correct.
Rocket propelled grenade?
No, role-playing game.
Role-playing game. It has stories, and those stories end. Unlike some other RPGs, there are no mindless fetch quests, says Darkspat. Everything you do carries some degree of weight. It's very important that everything is contextual, said Mr. Erickson. Each of the classes has its own story, and they're all very much genre pieces of their own. BioWare has always done excellent RPGs, i.e. Baldur's Gate. K-O-T-O-R?
That'd be Knights of the Old Republic.
Knights of the Old Republic.
Gee, she's good. Yeah, I couldn't tell you that.
That's why she's paid the big bucks.
Absolutely.
Mass Effect and Dragon Age. Compared to Blizzard, which have done really excellent RTS games, being the Warcraft series, Starcraft, Diablo 1 and 2, are you willing to
give... RTS?
I wouldn't call Diablo 1 and 2 an RTS, but yes.
What's RTS?
Real-time strategy.
Okay, thank you. Are you willing to give it a try to form an opinion, considering you don't have to be a fan of Star Wars to play SWTOR? I do enjoy your coro about games as an independent reporter with your range of items both relevant and quirky.
Thank Cheers,
you. Jeremy, a.k.a. Darksplat.
I'm glad you like my quirk, but I don't know if I'm... I really, really, really appreciate you writing in to recommend something to me. I think that's cool and very nice of you, seeing as I was without D3. I needed something else to play. But I don't think an MMO is a good match for me. I generally don't like them. I appreciate that this one's different and it's not an MMO like WoW is. So that's World of Warcraft. But I don't appreciate these constantly online environments as much. I tend to think about them when I walk away from them and I don't like that it does that to me.
You think, what's happening to my character while I've logged off?
Yeah, I'm wondering what's happening and I bet I'm missing out on something cool. And I really don't work well with that because I have things to do and a family to look after. So that's not saying that people don't have things to do and families to look after who do enjoy it. But I find time management very difficult with MMOs. And I have never seen a Star Wars movie. So I think
You've
it would be...
You've never seen a Star Wars movie. We were going to rectify that and we have been remiss in our responsibilities.
To do that. I'm floundering here all on my lonesome.
We need to make you sit in front of episodes 4, 5 and 6.
See, I've been told to skip the first two.
Yeah, I've definitely... The first three and then and live tweet.
Yeah, we should.
We'll tee it up as an event.
I reckon you should see Robot Chicken's version first.
Probably.
That's hilarious.
I do like Robot Chicken.
Have you played Lego Star Wars on the PlayStation?
No. Okay. No, I haven't. Right. See, I seem to avoid Star Wars stuff in general, but I really do appreciate you letting me know that this is good. And if it's super cheap on Steam one day, I might buy it and give it a shot.
For the sake of a couple of bucks?
Yeah. If it's like $3.50, then I can't say no, can I?
No, you cannot say no.
No.
Last but certainly not least, longtime friend of the panel, Primal, who's in our chat room tonight, says via the feedback address, "Hey Tech Talkers, much love to you all from SA, from last week's podcast regarding the real-time notification of mobile data use, the telcos managed to monitor prepaid users to the second real time. Otherwise, you could potentially use a lot of data that you've not paid for. And they don't have a leg to stand on.
He's onto him.
And pursue you on a prepaid plan. This is similar to the feedback from Freak earlier. Why can't they do this for contract clients
they
who pay more
they
for
can.
A higher level of service?
They don't, because what you said, Ron.
Why? Yeah. Says Primal. They love people that go over their cap because, particularly with data, because they make tens of thousands per month on people who are A, on the wrong plan, B, poorly educated, C, just have a big month on data for some reason. Vodafone are horrible at this. Pull your finger out, telcos, says Primal. Keep up the good work. Cheers, Phil. Thank you very much, Phil. If you'd like to communicate with the panel, you can. feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
Very good. And we've got another one, but we'll read that after the break. We're going to take a break. Back with more after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Oh, what does this button do? Hello, everybody.
But I buck the trend on the hive mind that is Tech Talk Radio.
Which is okay. Patently absurd.
It is absurd, exactly right.
But anyway, my point is...
Moving along.
My point is...
And why do you have to change the phone number?
That's a good question, Dr. Ron. Why?
If they're that clueless, they should not be answering the phone.
I can't see a blue tin. I can't see a blue tin.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio, it's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
A while back, we had a app of the week, Dr. Ron. You choose them. You probably know about this one too.
I do know about this one. I had this actually demonstrated to me very professionally.
Really?
Yeah,
who by?
By longtime friend of Tech Talk Radio, Phil from Ausdroid.net.
Okay, there you go.
Which
well,
is a great Android news and resource website.
Phil actually sent us an email today, and he said he's got two Cerberus anti-theft licenses for Android to give away.
That's what we want to hear
tonight.
Fantastic.
Free stuff.
Free Woo. Giveaway stuff.
Now, this app, you can go and check it out. Like, look in our apps, previous apps, you'll see a link there and all that sort of stuff. But I use it on my phone, and I think it's actually really good.
So you don't need one, so I can have one for my phone.
Yeah.
Lena won't need one, so I can have the other one.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, problem solved. Moving right along.
What else has happened this week, Andrew?
Microsoft have...
No, we're not going to snap them up for ourselves.
No, and I'm going to make sure of that.
Yes, we figured that Lena's is the best person to keep everybody else because she doesn't have an Android device.
Yep, so I can't steal them.
So you can't steal them. So what we thought we'd do, thanks to Phil giving us these two licenses for this software, which I can't remember whether I got out what it actually does. It's a bit like Find My Phone, but only a lot more for the Android. It lets you take photos and it lets you do things to your phone in stealth via the website. If you lose your phone, providing it's got batteries, you can communicate with it and wipe it and lock it and do all sorts of...
Yeah, it's like an anti-theft application. You can turn location services on if that's possible. It can tell you where it is, help you find. It might even be useful if you just lose it and you leave it in the car or
like
drop it.
Like Find My Phone.
Yeah, it's what it is.
Exactly. So if you want a license, what we were going to get you to do is to send us an email to our feedback@techtalkradio.com.au address. Tell us whether you listen live or not live. That is on another radio
station. Well, tell us how you listen, whether you listen on the podcast or whether you listen to the stream or what radio station you listen to us on.
Perfect. And then tell us, keeping it relatively simple, as in not lots of words, but, you know, a couple of paragraphs, when you could have really used a device or a bit of software on your Android like this. Did you leave it in a taxi? Did you leave it at the missus's house? Do you use it for pranks? All sorts of things like that come
Where's
to mind.
Where's the most embarrassing place you've lost your phone?
Yeah. Yeah, so...
And make it funny, because I'm in charge of deciding who wins. If it's not funny, no dice.
So there you go, everybody. You have to tickle Lena's fancy when it comes to...
If I have to read all these emails, you better make it worthwhile. It better be funny.
So thanks, Phil, for...
keep it nice and brief. Yep. So 25 words or so.
And clean, thank you.
And get them in for our next show. And Lena will tell you who wins after that. And when we'll pass the details on to Phil and he can do what needs to be done. So there you go.
Awesome.
Thanks, Phil.
Thanks very much, Phil.
I feel like I should wear a gold sparkly dress or something.
You're going to be the barrel
one
girl.
One of the barrel girl kind of jobs. This will be fun.
It'll be lots of fun. Mm. It's a great application. Have a look at it. It's in the Google Play Store, Cerberus Anti-Theft.
I think I've got a barrel at home for drawing things out of.
I still
can bring it in next week.
I still have our Tech Talk Radio box from our OB when we had drawing raffle tickets out of that.
Did that have sparkles?
No.
No, it's disappointing.
It had Tech Talk logos all over it.
Oh, that's good.
Hmm.
That's what matters.
Still got it.
Windows 8 to arrive on October the 26th. Are we all going to race out and grab one? Microsoft's hanging its hat on this. This is big time. Graham, have you heard any updates since? Well, put it this way. Are you still using it or have you lost interest in it and moved back to Windows 7?
I'm not using it regularly. I've still got it installed on that one little laptop at home, which occasionally I pull out and play with until it frustrates me enough for me to throw it across the room and go and get a real PC.
Mm.
But, it's Microsoft are clearly, they're betting the farm on this change of direction for Windows.
They are. They actually, they did really well in their financial bottom line in respect to profit, but unfortunately their losses exceeded their profit, so they posted a loss.
For the first time ever.
Yeah.
In 26 years.
Mm. 26
yeah,
years.
There's been a lot of media about that, but it's really a bit of a furphy. The whole thing's a bit of a beat-up because it's just because they've written down the value of one company they bought that turned out not to have any value. So it's a one-off. It's not part of the longer term decline of Microsoft. Even though Microsoft in the longer term may
Windows
possibly
could be.
In decline. Yeah, this particular loss that's in the media is a one-off extraordinary thing. It's an
accounting loss, isn't it?
It's not part of the trend.
Yeah. Still posted an annual profit of nearly $17 billion US, so they're still doing all right. And shares rose.
Yeah, they're making money hand over fist with their server business and their licensing business. That side of the business is going gangbusters.
So Windows 8, October 26, we've got the new range of servers, Server 2012, I think it is, which isn't far away as well. We've got Windows Phone 8, I think, in November. Why do you scoff?
Nothing.
Did you hear
the
that?
The last one went so well.
Yeah,
let's
well.
Let's do it again.
And there's the new Office 13, which is not far off as well. So here it comes, the new Microsoft suite, all in the space of a quarter, I reckon.
There's previews for that out as well at the moment too.
Have you seen
Microsoft.
Them yet?
I've seen the websites where you can get them from, but I haven't gone that far.
New range yet. Of icons, and that's all we know.
Yeah. if anyone has downloaded and had a play with them, then send us in some info about what you've learned.
Mm. Am I going to have to learn a whole new ribbon thing again? Is the orb going to make a comeback?
No, the orb I wouldn't imagine made a comeback. The ribbon in Office 2010 was significantly better than it had been previously,
I thought. Yeah, I agree.
So I think in that part of it, in that the user interface is heading in a helpful direction.
Hopefully they don't change too much.
Well, you don't run XP still, do you, Dr. Rock?
I have a machine which runs XP that I use for XP-only things, but no, not as a rule.
Yeah, you can run XP mode on Windows 7 if you've got things
yeah,
to do that.
Right.
I do that with one particular application, but that's another story. With the Windows 8 coming out, there's a timely reminder that Windows XP support runs out in 2014, which is only around the corner, really, in computing times. But also that the newly announced Office 2013 will only run on Windows 7 and 8. So if you're running XP, there's an encouragement to move on to a newer platform very soon, I would imagine.
If you want to stick with Microsoft Office products.
Windows 7 is a great operating system.
I don't think anyone
should have any qualms about moving from XP to Windows 7.
Yeah, I think you'll have more qualms going from XP to Windows 8, I would have thought.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Such a cultural shift to the right or left. So anyway.
To the right.
To the right.
Yep, okay. To the right.
All right. Thanks, Lisa.
Nothing lefty about that. Nope.
Oh dear. All right. In other news this week, Australia slips in the broadband rankings yet again. Must be a timely reminder that we need a national broadband network. This is according to the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development. Australia ranked 21 out of the 34 first world countries for the key statistical title of fast internet, if there is such a beast. So we're moving down the ladder a little bit. The new ranking as of December of 2011 comes as a step backwards from the country which ranked 18th a year and a half prior and 17th a year before that. So NBN timely? Maybe.
We need NBN. We need NBN. Have you got the list there?
We really
can we do the top five?
No.
Give me fast internets.
Yeah, well, I can come around to your place to download all my backup photo, I reckon. Yeah, that'd be good.
I'd be guessing Japan or Korea or...
It'd be one of those.
Be above us somewhere.
Yeah.
Up in the top three.
One of those, definitely, with all sorts of reasons, I'd say. South Korea seems to have... Is it South Korea? One of the Koreas. I'm pretty sure it's
It wouldn't be North. It wouldn't be North.
No.
Not allowed to dance up there, so I don't think you're allowed to have broadband.
Switzerland took the top spot with almost 40% penetration, followed by the Netherlands, Denmark, France, Norway, and Korea.
Ah. Wow. There you go. Switzerland, huh?
New Zealand is also ahead of Australia.
Yeah, in time. About 2 hours.
Lol.
All right, there you go. Broadband ranking slipping yet again. Now, one thing which we're going through at a ferocious rate is mobile telephone numbers.
Yes, apparently. Yeah.
Apparently?
Yeah,
well, apparently.
I've got my opinions about this.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well, according to a man at ACMA the other day, we now have more soft drink vending machines and non-phone type sort of things using SIM cards.
Yes.
With mobile phone numbers that we've actually finally run out of the 04 prefix in Australia.
No.
Oh, really?
Not yet.
No, not yet. We've got a couple of years to go, I reckon. Yeah. So the new mobile phone prefix is going to be 05. So we're going to do land grabs and all go and get our voice numbers and keep, you know, if we've all got an 04 whatever number, we'll go and get the 05.
It's a lot registering doctoron.com.au and doctoron.com.
Yeah, like that. Yeah. So when you get a new mobile service, you can have an 05.
Oh, dear.
No. When I used to use a chat client called ICQ.
I remember that.
Way back when in the 90s. And the people with the smaller numbers were cooler because they'd have ICQ before other people.
Yeah.
So I think an 04 number is going to be cooler because you've had your mobile for longer than
the 0418 numbers are cooler than any other numbers because they were the original ones. Uh-huh. Yeah, the 0418. Yeah.
No, they were 018s before that. I had one of those because
I had an 018.
My 018 went to, they put the 4 in it and then it used to work for about 2 years. You could ring either number, then they dropped the 018s.
Now, do you remember?
Oh, here we go.
Do you remember?
He's pointing at me, ladies and gentlemen.
Back when the 018 was the analog, the AMPS network.
Yeah.
And when they dropped that network and forced the 018 users to move to the digital network, they said to everybody that they would give you the equivalent number. So if you had 018-123456, that you could have 0418-123456. So you could have the same number with the different prefix. So you swap your 018 for your 0418.
Yep.
Now, when they came to do my 018 number...
Uh-oh, what happened?
They said... Rattle. Oh.
Given there was away someone. Someone else had it.
It was owned by a Telstra number or something. It was something extraordinary that, meant I couldn't have the equivalent one.
So what did they do? Did they do a makeup for you? Give you something?
Well, what they offered me was a premium number without having to pay for a premium number. So a number with lots of double digits or lots of repeated digits.
Oh yeah, so you're 0418996600 or
something like that. Yeah. Well, you know my number. Yeah.
I do. Yes.
So yeah, that's how I got that number. That's quite a nice number.
As opposed to a not nice number.
As opposed to a fairly random number. Yeah. So, that was an interesting
story.
A bit
of reminiscing from the past, really, isn't it? Anyway, the 05 numbers, according to ACMA, they estimate that 100 million numbers will be needed to provide an adequate supply for more than 20 years, which is that what you get with a new range?
Well, 100 million will be the new range,
And it's scheduled to start rolling out as early as 2017. So, we've got 5 years to run.
Yeah.
So, they're being preemptive here.
Well, they need to be. There's a couple of reasons they need to be preemptive. One, they'll have to shift any existing services that use 05 as the first two digits.
We can be American television shows. 0055. No? No. No, sorry.
555.
555, that's the one.
Yeah. But that's home. That's landlines.
Yeah, geographic landlines. And I think 0255 is a real... Yeah, 0255 something.
Oh, somewhere in Sydney or in New South Wales.
Okay. Somewhere, I think. And they currently get those phone calls from the made-up US numbers that are in the US are reserved. What was I going to say? I was going to say that they'll need to move existing services that start with 05, and there's a couple of them. They're somewhat obscure and not highly used services anymore. There was an 0500 sort of personal find me anywhere number service that Telstra had 10 or 15 years ago. Did anyone remember
that?
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
Yep. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
0500 numbers, yeah.
And it used to hunt around on all the mobile networks phones and find
you. So you could program, so I'll be at home between this hour and this hour and in the car between this time and this time and in the office between this time and this time, and it would find where you were. It was like your personal find me wherever I am number.
Mm-hmm. Very expensive. It never really took off.
No. But
he liked the lesson. Very expensive.
If there's any numbers that are still allocated or still working in that service, they'll have to get rid of those. And there's a few other little obscure things that are in that area, so they'll have to get rid of those. The other thing they need to do is warn people who are programming things like
phone systems.
PABX's phone systems, exactly. So that
to allow an 05 number.
Yeah, so that they treat the 05 numbers as mobile numbers and not like whatever else they used to be.
Like that'd premium rate services.
That'd be pretty easy to do in today's modern switching.
I can guarantee...
I'm not in that gig.
I can guarantee... Well, it'd be pretty easy to do by someone who's got their head screwed on and is doing the right thing, but I can absolutely guarantee that when these numbers start coming into use, that there'll be lots and lots of people having problems. Oh, I can't ring you on your mobile phone because my PABX won't let me and stuff like that. There definitely will be people who haven't had anyone look at their PABX in the last 15 years who are going to have problems.
Mm, the default programming for a lot of PABXs is just to restrict everything.
So you've got to open it up.
Then you open it up with the particular number ranges, and unless that's, like as Graham says, unless the 05XX number range has explicitly been put in, you won't be able to dial it.
Yeah,
and we're going to need to do it, though, because it's not just phones.
You'll get two classes of people. They'll get the people that haven't had their phone system looked at for 15 years, who just don't have people coming out to maintain it, which is bad, and they should make sure that their phone system is being maintained for security reasons, if nothing else. But also, you'll get the sort of sloppy fly-by-night people who do you get a free phone system if you sign up to my phone network, and they're not doing proper maintenance, even though they're paying a subscription rate or something. So, you'll get both of those sorts of people having troubles.
And whilst on the subject of mobile phones, you've been on a train, gone through a tunnel and lost your connection?
Yes.
Happens in our city, Melbourne, all the time.
Unless you're at the station itself.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you live in Sydney, you're lucky because all of the telcos have got together, well, Telstra, Optus and VHA in particular, and they've completed their phase one of a network expansion that sees coverage for Sydney commuters in Sydney's City Circle and Eastern Suburbs rail tunnels.
Yeah, I think Optus actually got the contract to do the work, but they've done it in such a way that the other carriers have access, I believe.
Oh,
how
shed.
About we just have Wi-Fi on the trains? Free Wi-Fi.
They tried that on ferries, I think.
They've got on trams.
I think
there's
Warlock,
a
who's a regular,
tram.
Says he doesn't like it. Is there?
There's a free Wi-Fi tram.
There's one free Wi-Fi tram.
That's a gross generalisation then, isn't it?
I think it's orange. Bright orange.
So you got to hang around the platform for a while and wait for the free Wi-Fi tram, do you?
Yep.
They should try internet on aeroplanes too, but that's another story. The telcos have switched on the network equipment that provides coverage in the North Shore between Central Station and North Sydney. So there you go. You can have people chattering next to you on the train as you go home in the tunnel. Isn't that good?
Mm. How marvellous.
Yeah.
Distracting you from reading your book on your Kindle.
I think the good thing about it is that we're seeing cooperation here with telcos, which is traditionally not really. They all go their own way. Look at the infrastructure.
Yes and no. Sometimes they do collaborate on, transmission sites and so on. It's not always that they all go their own way. Sometimes they're forced to cooperate.
Well, they did it in the CityLink tunnels. Now, I'm not sure about the tunnels in Sydney, but I know that you don't drop out when driving through the Sydney tunnels. and you don't in Melbourne anymore. So it's probably just a natural progression to go into trains and those sort of tunnels for public transport.
Well, it's presumably the same technology.
But put it in the telco, it's probably good that you get a dropout because you've got you know a minute of dead silence where you can't make any calls and then they reconnect the call after that. So it's a bit of a profit winner for them, isn't it? That's telcos being what they do. That's why when you're on a post-paid contract, they won't tell you when you get your limit. Sorry, I'll take my conspiracy theory hat off.
Yeah. Very cynical.
Yeah, well, you have to be. Speaking of interesting people, too, which we were earlier.
Talking about me already?
Yeah, absolutely. Ah. Do you know Marissa?
Mayer?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah?
Personally?
Not personally.
Oh, okay.
I know of her.
Who's Marissa Mayer?
Marissa Mayer used to be employee number 20 at Goog.
Oh, yeah.
And now?
She's now the top CEO of
Yahoo.
Now, right. Dr. Ron mentioned this in the news the other day, but that's a big call, and it's a very rubbery pay figure that she's getting. It depends on which magazine, organisation or news feed that you read, but it varies from about $60 to $100 million.
It depends on the value of the stock as well at any particular point in time. Because the package includes stock and stock options.
Yep.
But certainly, yeah, lots of millions of US dollars, up to $100 million US.
Now, Lyd knows Marissa quite well.
Our US correspondent, Lydia Davis.
Lydia Davis, yeah. So, be interesting to find out the gossip there. But obviously, it was a bit of a change of ship, really, halfway through, wasn't it?
Well, the position was made vacant at Yahoo after, I think we reported a few weeks ago, Mr. Scott Thompson had that whole thing about misleading qualifications.
He may have told a furphy.
He may have told a furphy about his university degrees.
Oh, that's right. He lied. Yeah. He didn't tell a furphy. He outright said, I have this, but I don't. He didn't.
Engaged in fraudulent behaviour, allegedly.
And Yahoo said, how about you just resign and we'll call it even? He said, okay, bye. And he left.
He was lucky.
So the CEO position's been vacant since then for a few weeks.
Really? Yeah. Seems like months that happened. It was only weeks, isn't it?
I think it's only a few weeks ago, yeah. But Marissa Mayer's, as you say, has been at Google for a long time, 13 years. She's been there, worked on Google Toolbar.
That'd nearly be all of Google's life, wouldn't it?
Worked on iGoogle, which was your favourite. You were lamenting the demise of iGoogle.
Yeah, turning that off.
She worked on Gmail as well. So she's done a lot, made a lot happen at Google.
Yeah, one of the people really pushing Gmail, I believe. There was a lot of people saying, no, let's not. And I think she's one of the people who took it over the line and said, yep, we're doing it. And really pushed hard to get Gmail, so thanks.
Well, the pressure will be on her now to perform at Yahoo because they're starting to flounder, aren't they, against Google and also, you know, the likes of the social networks like Twitter.
Well, if they can't do it with
Facebook.
Marissa at the helm, I don't know what could actually get them to have some relevance.
Hopefully she's the right person for the job.
One could hope. You know what irks me, though, is that you have, like, a lot of television networks sort of bandy together with Yahoo, like Channel 7, I think, in Australia, or Yahoo 7 or whatever they call themselves. And everything hides behind that, so they don't actually have a real presence. It's all hidden behind like 9MSN are the same thing. All the programs are behind that. So.
Yeah, yep. That's how they're branded now.
Yeah, exactly. I just think that it's very hard in search to find anything when they're not in the same domain names, but that's just me.
What does 10 do? Who are 10 in cahoots with?
No one.
So 10 is just 10.
Yeah, but you've got to make sure you put the AU on the end of it.
Yeah.
I've learned the hard way.
You learned that the hard way.
Yeah, I did. Well, we won't go into that
no,
on the
No, let's
either.
Not.
And don't try that in front of kiddies either. But
10.com.au is what we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's Channel 10's
Channel
URL.
10. Don't do anything else.
No. No. The National Broadband Network and the ACCC and Optus.
Optus. Yes.
This is an interesting one. For years, I know, Graeme, you've been an advocate of the two cables running up and down the streets. And
I've been an opponent of the two cables running up and down the street, yeah.
And now we're seeing that they're actually going to phase out the cables going up and down the street in lieu of this glass thing that's pushed through.
And the ACCC got slammed by the federal opposition, by Mr. Turnbull,
now,
for
making this decision. Why was Mr. Turnbull so upset about this? What was his problem?
He doesn't understand that you have to... He thinks that everything should be competitive, that there should be competition for absolutely everything in the world. I think in Malcolm Turnbull's mind, he would like to take every road in the suburban road network, divide it down the middle, sell it to two different private operators, and you have to pay a subscription fee to drive one direction on the road and a subscription fee someone else on the other side of the road.
We could have EastLink and WestLink.
Well, yeah, it's really... This is the sort of crazy thinking that is going on in Malcolm Turnbull's head. to be fair, it's probably not him. It's because he is a
Malcolm's a
person.
Pretty cluey bloke.
Usually
when it comes
he is.
To tech.
Yeah, I think he's being, towing the party line. He's towing the party line, yeah. And he's being forced to
read press releases he doesn't want to read.
I suspect so, but nonetheless, he read it out, so he has to cop the flack about it. It is absolutely crazy.
Should get Tony Abbott to read it out. Then no
to
one
have,
would believe it.
To have competition on something like the cable running down the street to the houses. That's not an area where competition makes any sense. You end up with duplicate and triplicate infrastructure that means you're paying twice or three times to maintain it all. Where you really want competition and where you can have really good competition is on the services that are being delivered over
Absolutely.
That infrastructure. So you don't divide up roads down the middle and sell one half of each little suburban tiny street to two different companies and charge people to drive on it. You put the road in place and then you have competition for different, companies providing services by driving up and down the roads.
Yeah, well, in fairness to Mr. Turnbull too, there are a few other people that are outspoken saying that this wasn't a good idea as well. So they're all on that side of the camp.
Yeah, I can't see what the downside is. The ACCC looked into this really clearly. The ACCC said, yeah, the obvious response.
They said it was complex.
Well, yeah, the ACCC said, well, at first glance, this does appear to be anti-competitive because we're taking a competitor away where there is a competitor. But they came to the conclusion, quite correctly, that the wastage of having two parallel cables running down the same streets to the same houses, both of which having to be maintained and having to be paid for and all that sort of stuff, was not the place where competition should happen. That's a place where you can combine your resources, have a single network, the very best network that you can make it, and have competition to deliver services over it. So the ACCC, in my opinion, made the right decision, and that's going to be a good thing going forward for Australia.
Mr. Turnbull criticised the cost as well, of course. He said that Optus is going to be paid $800 million to move its customers.
They don't like spending money at all, the opposition. It's a bad thing. Bad thing.
Well, yeah, it's a small portion of the $43 billion or whatever, the $34 billion.
Well, look,
Telstra
got out of it for their network.
Yeah, well, that's right. Telstra made a lot
of
money too.
Really, isn't
yeah.
it? So, all right, there is rumour around, and I know Lance doesn't like talking about rumours in Apple devices and things like that.
Definitely not.
iPhone 5.
But there is.
I want to buy the iPhone 5.
Do you? Mm. Well, if that's your case, have a listen to Adam Turner's view from the couch.
Oh,
this
what's
week.
Adam got to say?
Adam's talking about. The accessories
that
go along with
this
these
is, I think this
devices.
Is a bit of a non-issue, but I want to hear what Adam has to say first.
Let's talk about it after this. Yeah.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
Lately, I've been wondering if we'll ever see that one connector to rule them all. If you're a gadget lover like me, then chances are you've got a drawer full of old cables, plugs, adapters and chargers. They'll be for notebooks, smartphones, tablets, music players, digital cameras, ebook readers, Wi-Fi hotspots, external hard drives, battery chargers, all that stuff that you'd have accrued over the years. And what's worse, you've got to lug all these cables around when you want to take your gadgets with you on the road. And when you buy new gadgets, you've got to get new cables and new accessories. It's one of the major hassles of the digital age. Now, there has been a push to make micro USB the universal standard for connecting up gadgets, but Apple, of course, has refused to get on board. Now, to be fair, it's not the only one. You know, tablet makers such as Samsung also use a 30-pin connector for some of their devices. The fact that Apple has used the same connector for all its iPhones, iPads, iPod Touches up until now has certainly made life easier for iGadget lovers and helped the Apple ecosystem flourish. If you've grown up with an eye-centric lifestyle, you may never have experienced this cable and adapter hassle that I'm talking about. But all that could change with the upcoming iPhone 5. The rumour is that Apple is looking to change the connector on the iPhone 5. Now, there are Apple rumours every day, but this one is getting stronger and it's starting to look like it could actually happen. Of course, Apple's not going to change it to micro USB to be like everybody else. It's going to have yet another proprietary connector. If this happens, households like mine will face the hassle of owning iGadgets on either side of this connector divide. They'll be forced to question whether they want to throw away everything and start again. If they're already a little disillusioned and frustrated with Apple, this could present the perfect opportunity to make a clean break. Switching the connector on the iPhone 5 would significantly fragment Apple's ecosystem, and that's a fragmentation which Cupertino has fought hard to avoid because platform fragmentation is one of Android's weaknesses that Apple exploits. Apple's one-size-fits-all approach is frustrating, but it's really useful for people who want stuff that just works. If buying an iPhone 5 means replacing all your accessories, it will be interesting to see what Apple adds to the iPhone 5 to sweeten the deal. Near-field communications is an obvious candidate, but Apple might also take the opportunity to overhaul the iPhone form factor and change the screen size. Better to do it now than to wait for another year and then make a second change which renders yet another generation of iPhone accessories obsolete. The extra screen real estate of Samsung's Galaxy S3 and HTC's One X is certainly putting the pressure on Apple to upsize the iPhone. Now, if a new, bigger iPhone won't fit into the old iPhone accessories, then a connector change isn't really an issue. But a new connector without a bigger screen is going to be a hard pill to swallow for some iPhone owners. Even if Apple or third parties offer an adapter, it won't help with some of the tight-fitting accessories such as the TomTom iPhone car kit. Of course, Apple will resort to all its usual tactics to encourage people to upgrade to the iPhone 5, but you can be sure that plenty of iPhone 4 owners will wonder whether it's perhaps easier just to upgrade to a 4S on the cheap to postpone the pain of changing all the connectors. Hardcore Apple fans will buy the iPhone 5 no matter what, but swinging voters may think twice if it means throwing away all their accessories and starting again.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Storm in a teacup, what do you reckon, Lise?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sorry, Adam, but must have been a slow news week.
Oh, gee whiz.
Yep, no.
In one sense he's right, because there will be a lot of stir and comment about it, but in reality, Apple users have had it really, really good compared to everybody else. That connector's been around since the first iPod.
Yeah, and I think we've got so many of them at home, which is all frayed around the edge of the big plug, as opposed to the USB plug, because you know it's been used in the iPad, the iPhones, the iGadgets, the iPods, the everything have used them, and that's been really good. But maybe it's time. Logistically, everyone does this.
Manufacturers change things like this all the time, whether it's, you know, we've gone through two or three, you know, iterations of USB form factor change.
Yeah,
we've always had proprietary connectors for car kits. We've always had proprietary connectors for headsets and for
and
power
every
chargers.
Other manufacturer does it with every different model that comes out.
Yeah. Yep.
Whereas Apple, with their iPods and iPhones, have kept that same connector for generation after generation after generation.
Mm.
And it's only because people are used to it that it's going to be a bit of a shock to them. But that connector's had its time.
Yeah.
It is an issue, though, that people need to be aware of. If they're going to buy a new Apple device, and this rumour about the different connector sizes is sort of gaining traction, and it might very well turn out to be true. But, you know, you just have to be aware of it. If you have a clock radio, you know, iPhone dock sort of device beside your bed, it might be that the new device won't fit in it. You know, if you have other accessories that particularly use that connector, then you just might have to consider buying a new accessory.
Now, what did you say about Apple users being able to afford to...
I made a joke off air on purpose.
Oh, my apologies.
That Apple users... there's a stereotype that Apple users have more money to burn than others, which I don't necessarily agree with, but it's a stereotype that's still there.
No, that's
but they,
rubbish.
They could still afford to replace their accessories if they wanted to. But I was joking. I was being silly.
Oh, okay.
I was being facetious.
Just briefly before we move on, are we right to move on?
Yes.
I think so. Thanks, Adam, for the insight, though.
Apple was ordered to publish Samsung an apology in the United Kingdom. Now,
you've got to put on the website for a while.
Yeah, they do. A UK court has ordered Apple to publicly admit key rival Samsung did not copy the iPad tablet in its own designs. Now, this is contrary to everyone else in the world, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, because there's an injunction in the US saying that you can't sell the Samsung tablet over there. But anyway, according to Bloomberg, under the report ordered from the UK High Court Judge Colin Burrs, Apple would be forced to publish details of its key loss in a patent battle against the South Korean manufacturer. And this was on its website, as you said, Dr. Ron. Apple must also take out and pay for notices published in the Financial Times, the Daily Mail, as well as the Guardian's mobile magazine and T3 in the UK. So how does that make the tablet sit everywhere else in the world? If the UK say one thing and the Americans say another thing, Maybe it's coming down to a market-by-market patent war for devices like that.
Well, it has been for a while. A market-by-market patent war with, Google leading the charge on enforcing ridiculous patents in many cases.
Yes, you know, trolls. Trolling.
Such obvious things that should never have been granted patents in the first place.
Oh, like the slide to open, the slide to unlock on the...
Yeah, and if you read stuff. The actual patent that they got for that technology, it's not as specific as the slide to unlock. It's unlocking a touch device by touching an icon on the screen and then moving it according to an image on the screen, which is so obvious for a touch device that, I mean, how could you have any other kind of unlock mechanism on a touch device?
Mm.
Anyone? I mean, it's such
you've got to touch it, don't you?
Yeah.
Unless you flick it. But, yeah, anyway.
And, I mean, one of the patents they're talking about is having the top working surface of a device like a tablet being flat from edge to edge.
I mean, hello, come on.
Yeah.
It was the same judge in the UK, Andrew, is on a Burse, who actually made the ruling in favour of Samsung for the slide to unlock. So he's not going to be popular with Apple, actually, in the United Kingdom.
Yeah. All right, so there you go. There's a bit of news on the patent trolling, the patent wars happening around the world at the moment. But Apple would be pretty happy with Qantas at the moment, don't you think?
Yes.
Yeah. Done a deal with 15,000 iPads going to Qantas. That's a lot of iPads. Wonder if they got a deal.
Yeah, is this for their pilots or for in flights?
No, we don't have 15,000 pilots, I think, flying for Qantas. But this is for in flight. Qantas is set to roll out more than 5,000 iPads to replace existing entertainment units on some domestic flights. Now, the airline's been trialing the tablet as a replacement for the expensive, you know, the on-demand stuff that you see. We've all flown Qantas
the
from time to time.
In-flight entertainment?
Yeah, so Alan Joyce has been saying that the opportunity is amazing for Qantas to cut costs and boost productivity. I'd be interested to see their model of how they're actually going to do it. But the company will roll out the iPads to its entire fleet of 23 Boeing 767 planes for a total of 5,842 tablets operating East Coast routes from Perth from the fourth quarter this year. So... interesting times there. Obviously, they've got their own little app or something like that, and it's all Wi-Fi through the aircraft.
So they have Wi-Fi in the aircraft to give them internet connectivity.
Yeah.
Is that right?
I guess so.
Okay.
The airline confirmed the iPad rollout, which is an additional contract, which, Apple would be very happy with, I would imagine.
Do you remember back in April, we had a similar report, which was Virgin Australia testing the Samsung Galaxy Tabs to do exactly the same thing. So they're going to give Samsung Galaxy Tabs to their like business first customers in flight.
Okay. And yes, it is a wireless distribution system that would be used to stream up to 200 hours of content to the iPads on eligible flights. According to the content is served from two servers running two 500-gig redundant hard drives stored near the plane's cockpit over 802.11n Wi-Fi.
Very good. Very good.
So you'll be able to log in. Oh, no, you can't do that. Actually, how's that going to work? Because
how's what going to work?
If you get on a plane and you put it into aeroplane mode, which turns every radio device off.
Well, you'll be allowed to have these on in Wi-Fi mode, obviously.
So does that mean you can have other devices on in Wi-Fi mode on the aircraft?
Not necessarily, no.
Or only iPads?
No, you'd have to read
Or possibly only their iPads.
Their iPads.
Yeah. Anyway, there you go. Qantas embracing the new technology. So I don't know how you're going to watch it. Do you pop it on the tray table or something like that or lean it up in the window of the aircraft? And how do you watch it? Do you put it on your lap? Or do you get a couple of rubber bands and put it behind the...
little hands.
Yeah, but
hold
you're not
it in your little hands.
You're not going to do that on a Perth to...
They might have a bit of, you know, Velcro spot on the seat.
That's
in front
an idea.
Of you.
Or a couple of the big red rubber bands you get from the post office. You put it around the head.
You get those funky folding covers and you just put it on your tray table. It's just exactly the right position and exactly the right
maybe
angle.
Maybe it's on an arm and it comes out towards you.
Oh.
And I wonder if you can do a trade up offer. You can swap yours for theirs.
For the brace position? Can't do the brace position when there's an iPad stuck there. Or it would make a tragedy into a bit of fun on the way down. You're like, well, I might as well stream this video.
I love your attitude, Lee. It's always look on the bright side of life when it comes to those sort of things. I think it's terrific.
If you've been a Virgin Australia customer and you've used the Samsung Galaxy Tab in flight, let us know how that's gone for you because they've been doing that for some months now.
Have they?
Yeah.
Oh, I've flown Virgin recently. I never knew anyone had any tablets.
You weren't given a Samsung Galaxy tablet? No. So business first customers, I think.
Oh, yeah, right.
You'd fly business first, usually.
No, I don't. That's the front of the aeroplane where the hostess is. The flight crew sit.
You walk in and turn left, usually.
Walk in and turn left?
Yeah.
I don't fly the plane, no.
TikTok radio budget doesn't extend to business first?
Absolutely not. Oh. All right, time for a break. We'll come back with more after this. What does this button do? Hello, everybody.
But I buck the trend on the hive mind that is Tech Talk Radio.
Which is patently absurd.
It is absurd, exactly right.
But anyway, my point is...
Moving along.
My point is...
And why do you have to change the phone number?
That's a good question, Dr. Ron. Why?
If they're that clueless, they should not be answering the phone.
I can't see a blue tin. I can't see a blue tin.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
There's a new company going to sell the NBN when it comes out, and it just got established the other day.
It's a new service provider?
Yeah, a new service provider.
Yeah.
A group of consultants and engineers in Victoria are planning to launch a not-for-profit internet service provider in an attempt to provide cheap access to the NBN.
Now, just to clarify, I waited for you to make sure you were talking about what I thought you were. They're not a company.
They're a co-op, aren't they?
They're specifically registered a co-op, so they don't have to follow the rules of a company.
Oh, well, there you go. Anyway, this group, they're called No ISP, there's a good name for them, gained a cooperative status under the Victorian law earlier this month, enabling them to recruit members and provide services without the financial requirements of the standard company structure. Now, these guys are going to offer plans on the NBN at minimal margins, facilitated by near zero costs, non-existent staffing, and none of the support or service structure that you now find at a regular ISP. So if you're not a tech-savvy person, beware. You need to know your stuff. But if you do know your stuff, what a great way to access the NBN.
If you are tech savvy and you don't need technical support 24/7.
Yeah. Yeah, if you don't need to be able to ring that 1-800
number. Well, more to the point, the people that will use this service are people who can provide their own technical support and will cooperate between themselves to provide technical support to each other.
Yeah, like on a chat or a forum or something like that.
Yeah, stuff like that. Yeah. And they'll have
like Wingepool.
Wingepool.
they'll have a website where you can report a fault, and the fault gets reported upstream to the what they're going through is a sort of a sub wholesaler. So there's a massive wholesaler that has a direct relationship with the NBN, and then they sell wholesale services on to smaller companies dealing with end users, and they'll deal in at that level in the system. This is a really interesting idea.
Great idea, isn't it?
It's kind of based around a community sort of effort. So there'll be shared support offered between members. They're talking about being able to share things like their data limit caps.
Yeah, trade their like unused quotas and things.
Yep, all that sort of stuff. It's really an interesting model. It won't be terribly useful for businesses directly to use, but someone who's running a business providing internet services to other businesses could be part of the co-op, as long as they're happy to provide the support burden in between.
Hmm. To their own end users.
To their own end users, that's right. They say that they're not going to have any trouble with people on selling the service or on supplying the service, so you can be a member of the co-op and get the service and then provide it on to your end users.
Great idea.
The only thing is that their pricing looks like it's not as cheap in some cases as the larger ISPs. So,
oh, really? That's surprising, considering they have no costs.
Yeah, but of course, an ISP like iiNet has got masses and masses of buying power.
Yeah.
So the price doesn't end up being that much different, which is the only sort of downside I found reading through it for people. But you know, you still might have more flexibility, for example. I don't know what the technical...
We've got to wait and see. They've only just formed. Yeah. There'll be a website along shortly, I'm sure. So.
And there might be technical advantages. Like people at the moment who deal with Internode...
Well, it's just got to plug into the plug on the back of the white box. It comes in your house, don't you? And then you just got to configure
I don't know what technical settings there might be behind the scenes that are hidden from normal ISP users. And what I was going to say, people who are Internode customers know that you can get into to the Internode website and change things like your ADSL profile, which for on other ISPs you have to do through the help desk and get them to change. So if it's like that and gives you access to back end settings, that could be really good.
Excellent. All right. Ready, Leans? Here we go.
Tech Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
A God mode exploit has been found in Diablo 3.
Really? A God mode?
Rot roll.
Have you tried it out?
So does that mean you go into God mode and you can't be killed? Is that right?
You are invulnerable.
Oh, shields up.
Mm. Now, this is actually a really bad thing. And I would normally share with you how to do it when an exploit that sounds super fun is... I would normally share with you how it's done because it sounds super fun. But this would be very unethical considering the real money auction house. I think, a loophole's been reportedly found in Diablo 3 that can, in effect, make you invincible, which for a game that has a real money auction house attached to it could be a bit of a problem. While it only works for the wizard class at the moment, there's apparently no restriction on which game mode, normal or harder, you use. The exploit renders a few effects inactive, but on the flip side, well, you can't die. Note that given the consequences of letting people run around without fear of dying while picking up items they can sell for actual money...
Yeah.
That's cheating.
Blizzard will be working to fix this super, super fast.
Would that have been put in there for developers, Lena, or...?
It may have for testing and QA and whatnot, which is quality assurance. They might have and then forgot to sew up that loose end at the end, which is a little bit silly. But, so I think that won't be open for much longer.
So it's one of those things where you got to, you go into the game and you hold down three keys and press F12 or something and it...
A little bit like that. Mm. There is a five-step thing, allegedly. What would I know? Don't look it up. Don't do it.
Don't Google it.
It's unethical.
Don't look at our show notes.
No. Nice. In nicer news to do with money, Minecraft... I love Minecraft.
Yeah.
So much.
I was playing Minecraft on the weekend.
Were you?
Yeah, I was.
Good job. Good job. Nothing better than when you're feeling a bit under the weather.
That's it. That's what it was. It was all about. It was just like to veg out for an hour.
Yep.
It was good.
Minecraft on the Xbox 360 has sold 3 million copies.
Wow.
That's insane. Marcus Persson reveals Xbox 360 version of open world creation game goes triple platinum since its launch in May.
So since May, on the Xbox 360, it's
generating $60 million.
That's a lot of money.
Nice. If its record-breaking launch wasn't proof enough, Minecraft for the Xbox 360 is now a bona fide commercial success. Marcus Persson, otherwise known as Notch, announced on Twitter today that the game has now sold 3 million copies. On the launch was May 9th. The Xbox 360 edition became profitable.
What she's trying to say.
Profiterole.
Yeah, them.
In 1 hour.
Oh, they're very tasty.
They are. In 1 hour, selling over 400,000 copies during the first 24 hours on sale and breaking all previous Xbox Live Arcade digital sales records. So that's when you digitally acquire a game.
What's Notch doing next? Do we know?
He's working on a couple of different games. I'll talk about them next week if you want.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we don't know much about them, but we do know a little bit. One of them's set in space, which is super exciting. But Mojang, his company, are working on a few different things.
He's a clever man.
He is a very clever man, and he's a very rich man.
He is now.
So the game reached 1 million in sales in 5 days and recorded more unique users on Xbox Live than Call of Duty Black Ops for the week of May the 14th. That's a really big deal. Call of Duty Black Ops is a massive title for the Xbox, so that was very exciting.
COD Blops.
COD Blops, that's the one.
Gareth in our chat room says he's been thinking about getting it for the Xbox, but he doesn't think he has enough free time.
Oh.
You don't. If you haven't got free time, don't get games.
No, do it. You'll make the free time.
You'll make time.
It'll be instead of telly.
You'll kill time.
It'll be instead of telly or instead of, boring things like housework.
Yeah,
bathing,
going to work.
The front lawns.
If the kids are hungry now, they'll hold on for a bit longer. Yeah. It takes you days to starve.
You can always call in sick a couple of days. So.
No. We, of course, do the right thing. But personally, I prefer it on the computer, but I haven't had a good play with the Xbox version yet, so that's quite biased, the way that I'm saying that. I'm a bit disappointed.
Oh.
Rot-roll.
Why? What happened?
Not just with
Diablo 3.
Not just with D3, which is the disappointment that just keeps on biting.
Have you played it since we last spoke?
No.
You haven't been back to visit it?
No. I'm too angry. I have to get over that before I'm allowed to go back. Do you remember me talking a little while ago about EA's Steam equivalent called Origin?
Yes.
The client's apparently getting a major update.
Well, we said last time you talked about it that it would need it because if for nothing else, because if they wanted to provide all their games through this and they also wanted to continue to support Macs, that the old version didn't support Macs.
Exactly. And they've released details about a major update that's incoming
for
Origin 9.0, and Mac compatibility is nowhere to be seen.
Seriously?
Yes. I'm so disappointed, not
That's
only because I'm a Mac user, but it's just a really dumb idea to not do that.
Alienate half your market.
Yeah, why do it?
Oh, no, not half your market, only the top 5% or so.
Aha, top. I'll take that. No. In May, EA announced it was asking
people
for
more money than brains.
announced that it was asking for fan feedback regarding its Origin online store. I think I talked about that, and I said if you've got any tips for Origin to let them know. It appears at least some of the suggestions are becoming a reality. None of the good ones, unfortunately. EA announced today that in the coming days, the company will roll out a client update 9.0, which the firm is calling a landmark revision. Because they're idiots. Numerous user interface revisions mark the most significant changes. So this landmark revision is just UI changes.
Oh, really?
Right.
That's landmark, is it?
Yeah, it's landmark. Ooh. Yeah, we'll ignore all the good advice people are recommending and we'll go with some UI stuff.
Some cosmetic changes, yeah.
First, gamers' friends list will be free-floating, a lot like Steam, allowing users to move the window wherever they want. Oh, that's nice of them.
Nice.
Additionally, the old navigation menu has been swapped out in favour for a new pull-down menu that EA says is more intuitive. Oh, yeah? You know who likes intuitive stuff? Mac users. Another major Origin 9.0 update focuses on players' game libraries, specifically the size of game icons, because we really care about game icons.
Why do I feel this is going to head it in the car park after today's show? Yeah.
With the new update, players can resize game images to make them as small or as large as they would like.
Handy.
Again, this is something no one in the world wants. Yeah. Lastly, the Origin 9.0 update adds an in-game clock, a feature EA says users vocally requested. Oh, really? Yeah, no.
What's vocally? As in someone asked when passing in the hallway?
One of them said, oh, well, that'd be a pretty good idea. I wish I could see how much time I was spending on my game because I can't look at clocks. Origin 9.0 is set to begin rolling out in the coming days, but users can try it out today by logging into their account and opting in.
Passwords Lena sent.
Origin recently celebrated its first birthday with Senior Vice President of Global E-Commerce David DeMartini calling the service's first 12 months foundational.
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 That's not a word.
That's not.
No.
But he's on my list now of people who don't listen to me. It's a very, very long list. But I'm really disappointed with that. I think they're calling it, these are the words they've used in the press release.
Go.
Major update.
Really?
Client update, which landmark revision. Significant changes. These are not landmarks. Significant
Sounds
changes.
Sounds like they've lost the plot.
Or any. Yeah, this is. It's ridiculous.
The
it's
clock could be quite
ridiculous.
Nice. Is that an analog
I think
clock?
Lena's about to blow a fuffer valve over this
I
one.
May.
I think we're going to need to.
Is it 24 hours?
Maybe it's a digital clock. It's nice because you could.
Can
you
change the colour? Nice,
you could maybe right click on it and change the colour.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
Yeah. For nighttime playing. Yeah. Red doesn't impair your night vision.
Yeah.
Good idea.
I think that's
well done.
I think that's landmark.
I think so.
I don't. I think it's ridiculous.
Are we done?
And if they want to be taken seriously
Andrew, we're not done.
No, we're not, obviously.
If they want to be taken seriously as a Steam alternative, they got to pull their finger out and actually do some hard work.
Cool.
Because this is not hard work. This is not impressing.
Shallow hell.
Yep. I'm not amused.
Very good. Thanks, Lane.
No worries.
We'll continue this later.
Yes.
Graham, at the beginning of the show, you mentioned the fact that you were looking at blocking certain sites for people's websites and stuff
well,
like that. You've got about 4 to 5 minutes.
Okay, well, I had this request from a customer over the weekend who was...
just to add to my mood right now.
Yeah, concerned about the... Settle down, Lee. Concerned about certain employees in their organisation who were not getting their work done, and the theory was that they were not getting their work done because they were spending too much time on Facebook and shopping websites.
Really?
So I was asked to investigate means of locking down the network and preventing groups of users at certain levels in the organisation from having access to sites by category. The person who requested named Facebook by name, but also said shopping sites in general.
Oh, my civil liberties!
Not eBay.
You don't have any civil liberties.
Apparently not.
Where do you think you're
living? Well,
the United States.
North Korea.
North Korea.
Yeah. Now,
feels
I want
like it.
No internet there anyway. They've solved that problem.
I want to know a couple of things. What do people think about this? And I'm starting to get a sense of this already. And I've got my own opinions, which I'll talk about at some point as well.
Are you soliciting from listener responses, are you?
And panel responses. I want to hear what you guys think about it as well.
I think it's wrong.
In a work environment, if you can't keep your staff entertained and on the job, then you've got to look at the job that you're giving them because they're obviously bored. And work shouldn't be boring, I wouldn't have thought.
As a creative person, I can't sit down and go, right, I'm going to write 10,000 words right now and I'm not going to have a break.
Yeah, I need to have a break.
But
at lunchtime, you should have that ability if you want to.
Yeah, you should. You should definitely, on your breaks, be able to use the internet freely. I disagree with restricting break time internet usage. Obviously, things that aren't appropriate for work are not included.
It's a cost to the... I mean, the company's paying for the bandwidth. The company's paying for the network and the maintenance and the PCs and all that sort of stuff.
They're also paying for the tea and the coffee and the sugar and those things. And it's just something that they absorb as a cost of having people in their
office. Well, you think it should be at that level?
Yeah.
Not everybody does. Not everybody agrees with that. But, well, telephones are or aren't. I mean, some people are not supposed to be making personal calls on their business phones. So it's a similar thing. Now, Andrew, your point about keeping the employees entertained, not everybody's fortunate enough in this world to have a job that's an entertaining job. Yeah. I mean, some people are set doing 500,000 credit card processing transactions or, you know, folding up letters and putting them in envelopes. And, you know, these are jobs that businesses need done that are not necessarily very entertaining, but you need conscientious workers to do them anyway.
Without naming your client...
I'm not going to name a client.
What type of industry were they in? Were they in that type of role or were they... With a,
is it a creative industry?
Yeah, is it creative?
No, it's not a creative industry. It's what's the best way to put it? The workplace is a
I'm dying here.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a way
to me?
I'm trying to think of a way to explain it. They're professional organisations. They're providing services to
like
their
accountants
members
or something like that.
So
they're on the computers. I'm trying to work out whether they're on the computers all the time, whether they're just alt tabbing to an online shop, or whether they're
they're spending a lot of time communicating with
their members by
email or by other means dealing with members' issues and requests and so on. Yeah,
I think there's been studies done that have shown that workplaces were more productive that didn't have filters on than workplaces that did, and that was because the people were sort of more relaxed, when they needed to take a break they could take a break, when they needed to work they could work, and they didn't feel like they were under the iron fist of their boss.
That's right, and that works well if you've got conscientious employees. But what do you do with the employee that isn't conscientious, that does neglect their job to
give them three strikes
and they're out? Look, I think the company's 100% entitled to lock down their network in any way they want. It's their network. Well, they pay the bills, as Graham said, and they control.
They're entitled to do it. Yep. But should they do it?
I also think, in the same breath, I also think that it's sad that the company feels that they have to do that, and I think they've probably got some more deep-seated employee productivity issues that they need to look at.
Yeah, exactly.
But the technology technology is being used to fix.
It's where a symptom, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It's like email policy, because if you're using a work domain for email, I believe that
you're representing the company.
Yeah, you are, and your employer has a right to see your email if it's a work-based related email.
Yep. Yep, absolutely.
Ruhu in the chat just said, you manage by production, not contact hours. Love it. Love it. Yeah. Judge on the output, not
exactly.
Not how long they're sitting
happy
there.
Happy staff or productive
staff.
Yeah,
but this issue came up with this this organisation because they're not getting the productivity out of certain members of their staff.
Well, that's the staff's problem, not the internet's problem. Yeah. You know what I mean? Internet didn't do that. That's a bad staff member.
Yeah. Yeah, right. It's an HR management type issue that I think the technology is being used as a band-aid.
Send us your opinion.
It's not going to fix the problem.
Send us an email.
If
feedback
exists. Yeah.
Let us know.
Yeah, I would like to hear what listeners have to say about this. If you've used a blocking service, I'd like to hear what blocking services you've used and how they work.
And how successful was it?
And is it relevant to your business too? Lots of questions.
Yeah, because Twitter can be really handy to shoot out a question while you're working.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. And you can get people saying, you know, giving you lots of help with stuff.
All right. Food for thought. We should talk about more of this on our next show. We'll see what correspondence we get. And I'm sure we'll get plenty.
Please email in your stories and your experiences with this sort of thing.
Do you have a draconian boss? Do you have a boss that lets you do these sort
of
things?
Are you a draconian boss?
Oh.
You big meanie?
You're looking
at
me.
And if so, no? And if so, why? Why have
well,
you
Well, I'm looking at Andrew and he's
have.
Saying, yeah, exactly.
All right. We're going to Oddspot Gadget App and Website of the Week coming up after this.
Listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
The Big T announced its prices for the national broadband network.
Ah!
And that's a risk you have to be aware of and you have to be prepared to take.
So you've unnecessarily highlighted that awkward part of the conversation.
DLC stands for downloadable content.
Yeah, that's what it gives you if you've already got the toolbar.
I want a portal gun.
I want a portal gun.
Telstra need to take more safeguards so that one piece of equipment can't take down a network.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
This week's gadget is the Samsung Galaxy Note, a phone-come mini-tablet with a 5.3-inch touchscreen.
Which country is this available in?
it's available here with 1280 by 800 resolution. Runs the Google Android operating system and is shipped with old 2.3 gingerbread, although an ice cream sandwich update is apparently due soon. It's bundled with a stylus for accurate writing and screen tapping. It's especially good for using the writing pad application S Memo.
Just go back. How big did you say this thing is?
It is has a 5.3-inch touchscreen. It's an enormous phone or a smallish tablet.
It's like an the enormous Samsung, phone, yeah.
The Samsung Galaxy 3, you answer a call, you can knock yourself out with
That's
it.
That's it. I've seen them in the wild. And
have you?
Yeah, you do a double take. You go, what's that person using?
Why is that person holding his iPad to his ear?
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. The phone itself supports 3G HSDPA networks. It's got Wi-Fi N, Bluetooth 3.0, an NFC chip, GPS, and it's even DLNA compliant with a TV out socket.
Oh.
T3 magazine says it's huge. The Samsung Galaxy Note is a well thought out bridge between phone and tablet and a classic cult gadget. 4 stars. The RRP is $698. More info at samsung.com/au. That's
what
our gadget.
Crazy gadget.
The Samsung Galaxy Note.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
A repeat website this week, but for all the right reasons, FlightRadar24.com. About this time last year, we featured FlightRadar24 as Website of the Week. But now the developers have introduced a new feature for the web browser, not for the app version yet. The new feature is called Aircraft View. What you can do is select the flight, then click the blue button, the Aircraft View beta button, in the pane below the flight data on the screen. And this shows you a real-time view using Google Earth
of where the plane is
from the point of view of the plane.
Whoa!
That's pretty spooky.
It's
you can
very
fly
spooky.
Into airports and watch them come in.
They work this out from the lat long and the altitude of each flight, and they make an assessment of where in space the plane is and show you what that would look like from Google Earth. Flight Radar 24 shows you what the pilot's seeing from their cockpit. You can also click on the plane, and you can rotate to see front, rear, left, and right virtual cameras. They're still testing it. It's still in beta.
It disappeared at lunchtime, Dad, but it came back.
But it came back again. It's worth checking out, even though it's still in beta. Sometimes I've noticed I haven't quite got it right, and the plane lands a couple hundred metres before the runway.
I was watching a plane land in Paris.
Oh, yes.
And the northern hemisphere seems to be a lot more accurate than the southern hemisphere. Like, they actually hit the runway, but from when they come into land, it's pretty impressive. You notice the roads as they fly over the top as they come into land. It's very clever.
Yeah. It's a good website. If you're a plane enthusiast, or even not, even if you're just a technology enthusiast.
Check it out anyway.
Yeah, to have a look and see what they've done with the website. It's rather smooth interface. I like it a lot. Flightradar24.com. Woohoo!
Tech Talk Radio, app of the week.
Thank you, Primal, for this week's suggestion to go hand in hand with our website. The application of the week is Live ATC Air Radio. As a bit of a plane and amateur radio enthusiast, says Primal, I jumped when the folk at liveatc.net released applications for both Android and Apple. Running at $2.89 for Android and $2.99 for iOS, I think it's a steal, says Primal, to be able to listen to air traffic control from airports all over the world. If you want a good chuckle, team it up with flightradar24.com and watch one of the major airports in Europe. It gives you a good idea of why air traffic controllers get paid as much as they do. In a single shift, they're responsible for thousands of lives. Cheers, guys, says
Primal. Tens of thousands, I would have thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for that suggestion. That's the app, and I've loaded it up on my iPod Touch, and it works really well. The only complaint I've got is there's not an iPad-friendly version yet, so you're running the big iPhone app in, you know, full screen mode.
Pixelated.
Looks a bit chunky, but... No, it's a good app, though, and it works well. Live ATC Air Radio, that's our app of the week.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
My, the meatloaf!
Bong. James Bong.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Lena, a Taiwanese teenager, has collapsed died at an internet cafe after playing Diablo 3 for 40 hours without a break.
Yeah, Lena saw the light. She moved
Silly
on.
Silly bear.
Officials say the 18-year-old booked a private room at an internet cafe and did not emerge for nearly 2 days.
Oh, no.
When an attendant checked on him, he stood up from the computer, took a few wobbly steps and collapsed. Police say they believe long hours in a sedentary position created cardiovascular problems for the man.
What does that mean? It just stopped pumping blood around his body?
Oh, he probably developed a clot or something.
Oh, is that
for
what it
is? Not moving, for sitting in the seat for 40 hours.
The other theory I've heard is that he didn't eat or drink for 40 hours and therefore had electrolyte imbalances, which caused a heart arrhythmia, which caused him to collapse. But people collapse and die all the time, so who's they to do. Say it was necessarily
Use
related to...
Use your Brian, people.
Yes,
yeah, exactly.
That's our Odd Spot, Andrew.
And that's our show this week. Welcome aboard new people in the chat. Hi, Emma and all that. Ray Triple J's there as well.
Don't forget to email us why you'd like a license for Cerberus Anti-Theft for Android. Tell us how you listen and tell us an amusing anecdote which explains why you need Cerberus or why one time it would have been good for you to have Cerberus.
Till next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the two-hour version or access the one-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03-8682-9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat, and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.